Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks,
the Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everyone, welcome to episode 208 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. If I can't even say our name. Can you believe that? Movie Mavericks. That's us. I'm Trevor. This is Jason. He's got a rundown for us.
Hey guys, we'll be doing the box office prediction game. Look at the five-day weekend for This Is the End, because that comes out on Wednesday. We're doing Wednesday through Monday on that. As well as Man of Steel, the second relaunch of Superman in the last 10 years. Movie news, Jerry Bruckheimer says that Top Gun sequel is still a go, if Cruise is interested. Talking about Denzel Washington's latest film, a futuristic action thriller named Shovel Ready. And a little interesting news about Warner Brothers giving up their stake in Friday the 13th and a South Park sequel to retain a piece of Christopher Nolan's Interstellar film that will be coming out this year. And obviously big news coming out of Google saying that they have a box office predictor that can predict things within 94% of accuracy. We'll give our thoughts on that, as well as Trailer Addict on Run Runner and The Family, Getaway, and Paranoia. A bunch of action dramas coming at you, and the weekend box office breakdown, the weekend that just passed, June 7th to the 9th, 2013. But first, cue up Mikey D, and let's get into this game.
It's not a question of enough, pal. It's a zero-sum game. Somebody wins, somebody loses.
Let's play the HSX.com box office prediction game.
Mikey's been eating on some bad box office throat.
I was just going to say, what do you think about all that?
I think he's, I don't know. I like Michael Douglas a lot, but I think he's quick to defend his wife, I'll say that.
He did say what he said and then suddenly had to backtrack, huh?
Yeah, I think that...
He said what he said, right? I mean, he literally said from, you know, carpet munching, he got throat cancer.
Right. And then quickly said it wasn't Zeta Jones'
carpet. And then said it wasn't that.
Yeah.
What did he say? It wasn't her? That it wasn't that?
Both, ironically.
Because there was, remember, he said Smokey. He tried to play it off... smoking and drinking, right? Then after that, which he did go to rehab for that, but which some said wasn't rehab for substance abuse, but for sex.
I think he was just trying to prove how manly he was after appearing as Liberace in the last Soderbergh film.
Yeah, well, that could be true. He was.
Let's get to the game. Because this is the end. This is the movie. I think is going to be the comedy hit of the summer, maybe even Ted-esque in its surprise box office performance. I don't think it's going to reach those levels.
This is interesting. These people are all playing themselves, right?
I think that adds to the fun. I don't think that detracts at
all.
Doesn't
it? I thought it was I think it's an interesting way to look at an end of the world. All these characters are going to James Franco's house, and it's just all the Apatow guys going to James Franco's house for a party, and what the end of the world happens, right?
It's exactly where I think you should be when an apocalypse happens, is that party at Franco's house.
It probably causes the apocalypse.
I think that is close to it. This was written by Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg.
It's the Pineapple Express guys.
Right, and Superbad.
They're pushing it.
This seems obviously right in their wheelhouse, and the trailers that... And this could have been an unmitigated disaster with maybe even a Vanity Project.
And
it looks like it's the opposite.
This is now, what, the third movie of the summer to push out to a Wednesday release just to get out of the way of the bigger blockbuster?
It reminds me almost when Knocked Up premiered against Spider-Man 3 or in the wake of Spider-Man 3, and they even mentioned, I think they gave lip service to that film, that, you know, the characters in it were going to see that because they know even the characters in this movie were probably excited to go see Man of Steel. They know that's the big dog, but if they can get out...
they won't even go to their own premiere.
I'm serious. That's why they got to give themselves a couple days to get out there, because they know their audience is... This is a demographic that's split between these two movies. I fully intend to see both these films. I do think that this movie is going to have great legs, though, and I think it's going to absolutely sink the internship.
Well, yeah, we'll get to that in a second. The internship kind of sunk itself.
This does open up on Wednesday, though, like you alluded to, which probably means they're going to have some early shows Tuesday night, at the very least a midnight show Tuesday, and that's going to tell the story when those midnight shows or those 10 p.m.
It won't be very big,
start,
though. This is only right now just under 3,000 screens. You know, this isn't a huge wide release.
Let's be fair, though. That's because there are so many movies in play right now. We have an extremely crowded playing field right now. There's not a lot of as many screens as popped up over the years. They're being occupied by mega blockbusters right now that are playing very well.
I'm just saying that that typically means midnight showings is going to be even not stellar on this. Because, yeah, there's not going to be very many of them.
All right. So I won the weekend between the two of us.
You won. So you do. Do we say this is HSX is HSX, if I can talk tonight, is tracking this at 25 million for the 3 day.
But
so
mind you,
5 day though.
Right. So this is almost like a holiday weekend here. And
so what are you thinking?
I'm gonna obviously I'll shoot first here because I won the weekend and I'll do the 5 day at 45 million.
Holy shit. So you think it does an extra 20 Wednesday and Thursday?
I do. I think this opens up at
least over this.
I think 10 to 12 million is not unheard of for Wednesday. I think people are out of colleges are getting out, and I think
it's June.
Yeah.
It's June.
And I think
so,
that it has a good 7 or 8 in it on.
This is rated R, right?
Yeah.
Clearly,
and this looks fun. I mean, let's be honest. This looks like a fun comedy. Everything the internship didn't have going for it, this does. I think this does solid 20 to 25 going into the weekend. I mean, this could be a bigger 5 day. I mean, I don't know. Man, if Man of Steel wasn't coming out, you could say this could be comparable to what The Hangover 3 did in its first 5 days. But it's playing against that, so I don't know. It mutes it to an extent. So I'm going to give this 45 million for the 5 day projection. Now, where are you at?
All right. Yeah. I mean, I think this is basically what The Watch kind of wanted to try to be.
Yes.
Although I think this does a much better job and it really hits I think the commercials and just the idea behind is really hitting its target audience very well. So I will say 40.
Okay. Yeah. We both think this does very well though. I think this has an eventual gross close
surprise.
To 100 million, if not over.
Yeah. I mean, this does. Well, that's possible. I think this does. Well, no, yeah, you're probably right.
Sci-fi comedies have had a rough time, but this looks like it finally has nailed it.
But this looks like fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this Identity Thief is a good kind of a target for this as well.
All right, so we both think this does well. Let's talk about Man of Steel, because this is the one that is really a head-scratcher to me. You know, we had the Warner Brothers chief executive come out on Tuesday and say that he expects Man of Steel to be their highest-grossing film of all time. A higher grossing than, on a worldwide basis, that is, than Harry Potter, which stands
at 1.3.
But
he only has to be Harry Potter.
Still, though, 1.3 billion.
But worldwide.
Superman, is he relevant still? This has been the problem. Of course, in the 70s when they had the initial blockbuster and it set the standard for superhero
films.
Well,
I think everyone
films.
Knows Superman still.
Okay, well, if you look at Superman Returns.
Superman's not, I think it's still relevant.
Superman Returns only did about 250 million adjusted.
But it wasn't good. We know that.
Okay. So if this is
good,
how
big
is this?
And since then, we have had Batman movies. This is clearly in the same vein. They've got Nolan attached to it. They've done everything that they could to separate this. They've even titled it Man of Steel. There's no Superman in the title. You know, they've done their best to kind of Dark Knight this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the best this could do, it's at 110 is what HSX is calling it. And really, that's probably about the best it could do, right?
That's on the high end.
I mean, I don't see this doing. Clearly, Iron Man 3 is coming off the Avengers, which was a surprise, in its own right. This doesn't have that necessarily, even with the Batman movies being what they were. This isn't Batman 4.
What do you think? Ultimately, this happens here is that you can have two ways you can go with this. You can look at comparables of other Superman movies, possibly even the Spider-Man film that they rebooted last year. But I think it's just so damn hard because Iron Man, the first Iron Man that came out, debuted, 98 million back in 2008? But even that, mm-hmm. to me, feels like it's not. And it just nothing is comparable here. So I don't know. Am I going first
Skyfall
on this?
Skyfall did a little bit less than that. When you look at the Batman Begins and Superman Returns, they both did, 50, 60, somewhere in there.
You got to adjust those to today's.
That's adjusted.
I'm just going to shoot a number out. You want to go first? You want me to go first? Cause I don't know.
I have a number, but I want you to go first.
All right. I'm going to throw out the number 93 million for the 3 day weekend.
That's so close to my number. All right. I'm going to change.
I'm so glad I went first.
Yeah, I had 90.
Which is in line with it, but we could be blown out of the water here. Could do 125. I don't know
I'm gonna,
how capable
I'll do 100. It is. I'll do triple digits then. I'll do 100.
Okay, so you think it breaks the barrier.
The other way. Well, I don't think it does less than 90 is the thing. It could, but I feel like it has a better chance doing more.
I'm saying this is what...
It's Superman. This is different than something like Skyfall. where you saw what happened with Skyfall. And I think that this is going to have more of that kind of a Transformers effect where people bring their little boys to go see this, whereas necessarily they don't, not everyone's going to go bring their little boy to go see James Bond. They will to go to a Superman movie.
Yeah, but you could see, you play that the other way around, too. You could say an older audience might go out and see James Bond and not maybe make it to Superman.
No, I disagree with that, though, because the older audience, how old is Superman? How old is James Bond?
The very old properties.
I think so. So I think that it translates well.
And I think that a female audience is maybe interested in this version of Superman a little bit more so than the last incarnation of it. As much as critical acclaim as Superman Returns.
Well, this doesn't look as... Superman Returns was just in that cheesy Superman world, and this looks a little bit more action-oriented.
At least there's no shot of the bullet hitting off the eyeball in this one.
I hope that that's after the credits. And I hope it's the groin.
That's the Easter egg? Yeah.
It's a testicle instead of an eyeball this time, because that's truly the Man of Steel.
Well, we have some big-time predictions here. I mean, this does look like it's blockbuster. It seems right. This does seem to be like one of the, now that Iron Man's out of the way, like the last premier superhero film of the year, although we have the Wolverine coming out, so it'll be interesting to see. You'll have to base
which
our projections.
Which could do really, which could be bigger than this movie.
Yeah, so we don't know yet, but at least it's not a superhero film every weekend like it's been in the last couple of years, so. Although some say that
been?
Fast
Are you
Six
sure?
is like, yeah, it feels like it.
It's been a sci-fi year, that's for damn sure. Which is might as well just be right because Man of Steel sci-fi.
Oh yeah, of course. And this
Aren't
is the
all?
End of sci-fi. It's a sci-fi comedy. So
that's what I mean. Yeah, we had Star Trek, and what else?
After Earth,
Oblivion. After Earth, it's been a hell of a sci-fi year, hasn't it? Good God.
Let's move on to the news. Speaking of Cruise and Oblivion, there. What's Jerry Bruckheimer up to? And this guy wants to sequelize everything, right? He's already saying that there's no set deal for a Lone Ranger sequel, but if it performs up to perceived expectations, which I think is very presumptuous, because I don't know anyone that's excited about this film, that there'll be a sequel to that, as well as Top
I wouldn't mind watching it.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't mind watching it either, but this isn't the kind of movie
isn't
where...
Isn't that a dumb thing to say? If it does well, there'll be a sequel. Well, yeah, it's built for sequels, isn't it?
Yeah, it's franchise ready.
Isn't that the whole idea of it?
Obviously, it's been a very troubled production. Remember, they shut this down at one point to reconfigure everything, and that says something about Bruckheimer when your project can't get pushed through because even though you've had your past successes that are doing $1 billion with the Pirates movies, that this doesn't, even the studio said,
oh,
we don't see the
isn't
production.
That other things affecting it, like John Carter?
True. And in Bruckheimer's own Sorcerer's Apprentice,
and,
which is
and his
strangely
own
reminds
couple
me
of. Problems. Prince of Persia, you know, that whole era.
Mm-hmm.
Hurt stuff for him, but this one looks good, and now he's talking about the Top Gun sequel still, even after Tony Scott's death, and Tom Cruise is maybe still interested at this point. He's saying that Tom Cruise has always said that everywhere he goes, people call him Maverick.
Just like us.
No one calls me Maverick.
They call us much worse things. We're being nice. But yeah, I like the idea that Cruise is still on board with this because apparently they put the pause button on this after Scott's death last August. And, they like the idea that they had and they're still wanting to move forward with it. And I think that's a fantastic idea. I think that,
I would still want to see it. I really wanted to see it with Tony Scott on board, but
couldn't have been better.
I still want to see Top Gun 2.
Mm-hmm. More regardless. So than a Lone Ranger 2. I'll tell you that. I haven't even seen Lone Ranger 1.
Yeah. All right.
The thing is this, people. You got to remember this. Even if the Lone Ranger is good, the bad thing is if it's really good, they're going to have
what?
Four sequels
well,
in the next 3 years.
Let me ask you this, though. What music do you possibly use for Top Gun 2?
That's hard.
Would he get some Kenny Loggins shit again?
Is Kenny Loggins still alive?
I don't know.
I think he's playing golf.
He had a hell of a run, though, around the late 80s in movies, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, he's somewhere with Sammy Hagar, sipping some Cabo Wabo. But, yeah, you can't put, like, you know, modern rock on
what,
this.
What do you do with it? I know, that's what I'm saying. It's going to be because that pulsing 80s beat and all that music is just synonymous with Top Gun. What the hell do you do with Top Gun 2?
Oh, they're presenting to me their biggest problem. Forget the script. What are they doing with the sound? The soundtrack is big here, people. All right. Denny Washington. Denzel there. I like this guy. This guy was really good in Flight, which I just saw. Good performance in a shitty movie, but
he flies well. Yeah.
He always brings his A game to things, even if it's you know, not the highest quality film. Speaking of like, virtuosity.
It's true. I love virtuosity. But you're right. This is a guy that will act well regardless of how shitty the script is.
Right. He always brings a certain level of commitment to his roles. And he did the sci-fi thing recently, with, I think, with a really good movie, The Book of Eli. And I know you like that movie a lot, too.
I like Book of Eli.
I like the movie a lot. And he apparently is going to be going back to the future again in an action thriller titled Shovel Ready, which sounds like a cross between Virtuosity and Man on Fire.
Sounds like a gravedigger.
Well, he's a hitman, a futuristic hitman who's been sent to murder somebody.
Shovel Ready.
It turns out to be a young girl, and he all of a sudden becomes a protector against these evil...
Mom.
Yeah, it's this is, I mean, can they get Dakota Fanning's younger
anything,
sibling?
Right? Yeah. It could be anything.
This is going to be based on a novel, an as-yet entitled novel that's coming out this summer. So they got the spec script. Yeah, they got the spec script, and they
How
did
they
this.
Get... Who's writing the novel? Is it someone famous?
No, it's an unknown writer, actually. Or writer.
But how did they... Is this the new ploy?
maybe that's got the graphic novel already to go.
Is it a graphic novel, or is it an actual novel?
I think it's a novel mixed with... And there's a graphic novel accompanying this. This is going to be a multi-platform futuristic deal here.
We've gone too far.
Yeah. Well, with a name like Shovel Ready, I can't believe this hasn't already been changed three times. And this is as bad as Bullet to the Head.
Pitchfork Ready.
It's just called Handyman.
Spoon Ready. They finally found Shovel, and they were happy.
What do you mean this news coming from Warner Brothers here? I mean, I didn't know Warner Brothers even had a stake in some of these properties like South Park and Friday the 13th. But
I had no idea either.
I mean, those are predominantly Paramount stamped all over those. I mean, Friday the 13th going back to the early 80s, and South Park is just a Viacom property.
Well, so they're just... Go ahead and finish the news.
Well, the news part of it is that they've forfeited their rights into any sequels or further productions on movies in those franchises to gain a piece of Christopher Nolan's Interstellar.
Which just means they're being bought out.
Right. Which we've seen recently, Paramount, you know, getting a cut out of Iron Man 3 and the Avengers. From Disney on the buyout there. But this is strange to me because of the fact that Nolan has been setting up shop at Warner Brothers since 2004. Through Insomnia, through all the Batman pictures, hasn't made a movie outside of them. And now Warner Brothers is so eager to get back into bed with Nolan that they've...
But they've given up a couple franchises that are probably not going to expand. I mean, South Park's probably never going to make another movie, right?
Exactly. Or Friday the 13th, which had, you know...
Which they've already had the reboot.
The reboot. It did
and
moderately well, but...
I think they're doing much more.
And, you know, the little hitch here in the plan is that if sequels to these movies don't materialize in the next 5 years, and not even in production, but actually have to be released in the next 5 years, then the rights revert back to Warner Brothers in the same, you know, in the same agreement as previously set. So... It's kind of a win-win because I don't see much movement on either of those properties. Like you said, South Park is kind of played out at this point, is it not?
Well, and plus, you know, Trey Parker and Matt Stone don't really like working in the Hollywood system.
At all.
So it wouldn't be surprising if they just stuck with the TV show, which they're more than happy to do and makes more than enough money. I don't see a reason for them to make a South Park movie that would be theatrical anyways. They've already made a bunch of movies straight for Comedy Central, straight to DVD. Why get involved in a big studio?
Yeah, I would agree with you.
And Friday the 13th, I think, has run its course at this point. We've seen they've already beaten Texas Chainsaw into the ground, and I think they're pretty much done with Friday the 13th, right? Especially for the next 5 years, this stuff can rest.
If you look at the success of movies like Sinister and you know, now The Purge, which we'll talk about later in the show.
Because it's new.
Exactly. Or it's fresh.
It isn't new. It isn't fresh. But it looks and feels fresh and new, and that's the key.
Well said. I think that they have much more to gain from being associated with Interstellar and the possible windfall from that financially than anything they can get from these next two properties. And it seems to be a good idea.
Wouldn't you? I'd be surprised if Paramount did anything with this stuff. They must have a ploy in mind, something in an idea at least to do something with it.
Yeah, there must be something in play.
Right?
At
Why
this
else
point?
Would they take the option on this?
Yeah, because if not, it seems like Warner Brothers just screwed over Paramount. You know, it's like the good
trade
of the child.
Yeah, they're just getting free money, right?
You know? But Warner Brothers has been pretty savvy as of late in getting involved in co-productions, as has Paramount. Mm-hmm. But locking up Christopher Nolan for Interstellar sounds like this, you know, with Nolan's success on Inception, love it or hate it, it did, you know, 800 million worldwide. And this looks like it could be another one just like that, especially a sci-fi angle Nolan film. Although
it'll be big, it'll, yeah, regardless.
You know, Nolan's right now got that kind of mystique.
Just look at Inception. Yeah. This is called Interstellar, I think, for a reason. Inception, Interstellar. Clearly, this is being marketed very well so far.
Can we call it incomprehensible?
We can't. It probably will be, and we probably will. I'm hoping this one's going to be good.
Let's talk about Google.
Google. Do you Google?
I mean, at least twice a day, but I don't tell my girlfriend about it.
You just did. So Google says it can predict the box office openings with 94% accuracy, and that's a little ridiculous.
I think that's okay.
That's too high, right?
Way too high. Are you going to tell me they saw The Purge make it 36.5? Give me a break.
A month out, they can do this.
There's no way they can predict sleepers like Now You See Me performing as...
Well, they can. That would be the 6%, right?
Right, okay.
Well, we don't know exactly. They're saying 94%. I'm guessing this is only for big movies.
And only for...
Within a certain release range.
And only for the first 3 days. This doesn't predict word of mouth, legs, multipliers, all that kind of stuff.
But it does predict opening weekends. This whole thing is just to get movie studios involved to so Google can now knows where to place ads and stuff for movies.
Scary thing about this is, well, how far are we away from a fake system like this where you type in prospective idea for a script, prospective stars and director, and it tells you what the hypothetical gross might be, and movies get greenlit based on that as opposed to artistic merit or any sort of value. That's the scary part of it.
94% accurate is just doesn't seem... I would like to see some numbers from Google to actually prove this, because that is so accurate that it's virtually impossible.
You know, we're obviously...
It's just impossible.
We're running the box office ace, box office prediction game, and even the best predictors are not predicting that all across the internet. That's why this is such an outlandish claim.
But to come up with a formula is very difficult, and it's going to change year by year. You know, different things are going to affect. It's not just going to be, and we, you know, they also have to be looking at the type of. It's not just Google searches. You have to be looking at why people are searching about something, what people are saying about it. You know, what are the sites
correct?
Because there can be a we've seen already a massive. Amounts. We just saw with The Purge a huge amount of social media and stuff, and that movie opened very well.
But we saw that with Snakes on a Plane when that was
just
internet.
Say that. We've seen it several times. Movies get a lot of word of mouth.
Watchmen.
And they die.
Yeah, remember the fan frenzy over Watchmen, how many tweets and social media? I mean, Snakes on a Plane was damn near named it and put into fruition because of that. So
what? I really kind of dispute this accuracy number because I wonder if maybe. It's got to be only for wide releases, clearly, because the smaller releases are damn near just impossible to gauge.
It will never predict sleeper hits, ever.
But 6% can't be sleeper hits. That's the thing. A month out, how can you tell me that you, by any means, can get it that close? That's insane. I want to see numbers.
You know, 6% is such a small number when you're looking at, you know, at this point through the year, 52 movies have been released, 54 if we're including this last. This last weekend here. There have been over 8 movies that have been sleeper hits this year that have done very well that you wouldn't expect to have done as well as they did. I don't believe they could have predicted Identity Thief doing as well as it did. The Purge.
Predictions are all over the place as well.
Exactly.
If you just go on the internet and look, even people who have a high rate of accuracy, their predictions are all over the place.
So this is like saying you can predict the outcome of sporting events too based on previous play.
Yeah, and we've heard this kind of stuff before.
Exactly.
Yeah. We've also heard these high percentage of accuracies from other people claiming that they've been able to do this and nothing else came from it, you know, the week later, a month later, a year later. So it makes me wonder if this isn't some kind of a little bit of a ploy just to get some.
But it is getting people talking because we've gotten emails, left and
it's
right about this.
It's an insane number.
Yeah.
You tell me 94% accurate? That just, I mean, you're number one at that. Because there are companies that get paid to do this. If you can really do 94%, then you're king of the crop there, you know.
Well, we shall see, and I think that eventually this is going to be a pay service, too, for studios only and not for just the layman trying to do the internet guessing here. But if
yeah, they're probably
going to
keep
this,
it in a, as a partner type thing would be my guess for it, because they're going to want the studios, if they want studios to be spending money on advertising, studios aren't going to want Google to be releasing 94% accurate box office prediction openings.
Well, maybe.
Because then they're going to be telling, no, because it's going to be, well, this movie's going to bomb a month out. This movie's going to do well. So therefore, the movie that's going to bomb will have no shot.
I think we'll have to make a Google player on Box Office Ace and see how accurate those predictions are throughout the rest of the year.
If they ever release them.
And if you haven't done so yet, go to Box Office Ace and play along with Trevor and I and the other many users on there.
You've got a good shot of winning.
Yes, exactly. Especially against us, because we are consistently not doing too well. Although
we've had some stumpers just this summer. You know, some pretty big upsets.
Yeah, I mean, there have been movies that have exceeded expectations, as like Now You Can See Me and this Purge and other ones.
I like the way you title things better than the titles themselves.
Yeah, you like that?
Now You Can See Me. But now you can. Better. You can.
You can only see me for about 6 weeks in the movie theater,
maybe
longer.
That's the tagline. Now You Can See Me. Now You Can.
I should be in marketing, shouldn't I? Thank you. Let's take a quick break and come back with the Trailer Attic. We got four trailers to talk about on this show.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
By the 21st century, fanboyism was the new faith of millions. Quality was judged by internet aggregates. The taste of 30-year-olds and 13-year-olds had become one. But then, suddenly...
Quentin Tarantino's level of disrespect to the thinking viewer is truly amazing.
The Dark Knight screenplay is like a 13-year-old Juggalo's Joker fan fiction.
It's not our job to validate people's bad opinions.
Two voices emerged from the wilderness.
An Alan Smithy podcast.
Spoilers guaranteed.
All right. A lot of trailers to talk about on today's show.
Let's do the trailer.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
I think we got some shield raising and red alert.
Yeah, let's, you know, you pick. Yeah, what do you want to start at here?
I get to pick? Yeah. Let me pick. Let's do Runner first.
Okay.
It's on here first. This is something that people were talking. This reminds me of some earlier stuff. What was the BMX one with the delivery guy?
Talking about Premium Rush?
Premium Rush. Doesn't this kind of feel like that?
Well, this is the Justin Timberlake, Ben Affleck film directed by Brad Furman, who did The Lincoln Lawyer, which I was a big fan of. I liked that movie a lot. Put it on my favorite film of 2011. And this kind of has the feel of Two for the Money, if you will. The old, I thought, the Al Pacino, Matthew McConaughey film, where this is about a kid who's playing online poker. Realizes
this is about
Sean
Parker.
He's playing basically Sean Parker, debts. Right? Yeah, because he's kind of ultra
suave. Yeah, because Andrew Garfield shows up in this for a second. I thought, what is this? This really is Sean Parker, like, has gambling debts and has to team up with Ben Affleck to get out and gets in some hot shit, you know?
Yeah, this looks like a kind of a Boiler Room-esque Ben Affleck, you know, the rich prick Ben Affleck. But it looked like it might be a good, solid B-movie with good acting.
Cable movie?
You know, yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
I actually
prefer. The acting didn't look good.
I thought the acting looked fine for what it was. I think that it reminded me of even.
Okay, that's not good.
Do you remember Antitrust? That kind of reminded me of
that. I like Antitrust, though, but this seemed much cheaper.
I'll tell you what, it's not helped by the September release date, which shows no confidence in it, and the cheesy graphics that are used for the title cards are just...
Well, plus, what's up with the Tron Legacy score? Are you trying to kid me with that?
I didn't even pick up on that. Well, you know what it reminded me of was 21 in those kind of movies as well. The smart kid.
21 was okay, but I wish that this had that then, more of that kind of a... It didn't feel like he was necessarily going on that kind of a journey, right? Like an eye-opening journey. This kind of felt like Lay the Favorite, which I don't think you've seen.
I never took the time to watch that one.
Another one.
It was reminding me of Two of the Money, a wannabe intense thriller.
Right, exactly. It's just like that. A wannabe is a good this. And like you say, I think this is the kind of movie that, you know, you come across on HBO and you watch.
Yeah, then you tell
that's
someone
that's what it looks
decent.
Like to me.
It reminds me
exactly.
Of, it reminds me of the B-level Ben Affleck.
I can't believe
drums.
It's coming out in theaters or that they're pushing it the way they
it's
are.
It's got a good cast.
I think the trailer is poor. Yeah, the cast is good, but the acting doesn't seem good.
I'm saving my reservations.
It seems like they're just there.
The trailer for the Lincoln Lawyer was dog shit too, and same company releasing, and that was, I think, excellent. So I'm waiting. But, you know, we're talking about 21 here briefly, and Paranoia is another drama thriller, kind of in the same vein, I felt like, as Runner, directed by Robert Luktik, who did 21 and Killers, and the movie that you and I kind of grudgingly like. But this Paranoia movie, starring
Killers.
Liam Hemsworth, Harrison Ford. Do your Harrison Ford impersonation for our lovers out there. That how did he do it in this movie?
I'm not.
Oh, you know, he can't get it. Too late in the night for your Harrison Ford impersonation. And
it's too mean, and I like Harrison Ford. Well, he's just an old grumpy man.
I'll tell you what, he does the grump in this one about three times in this trailer. I mean,
I know. This is just your classic crap. I mean, when Gary Oldman's character turns to Hemsworth and is like, I own you, you can't do that. I thought, oh, Jesus, really?
I thought it looked very similar to Runner, and the kid that gets in over his head is played as a pawn between these two people, and I thought that Runner looked better than Paranoia.
Well, I would agree on that completely, but I think they're both subpar. I mean, this is just... As much as we talk about Runner, this really looks like a straight-to-video release. And I can't believe Harrison Ford is still attracted to this kind of movie. Right? He's been making these duds like this for a while now.
It reminds me of he's, you know, this ominous character, and he's a shade of gray that we don't see. It, you know, kind of like when he was the villain in What Lies Beneath, or even
Presumed
Innocent.
You have Cowboys and Aliens, even. You know, I mean, Morning Glory, this kind of feels... Extraordinary Measures. There were all these Firewall, you know, all these Hollywood Homicide, even these weird little movies that felt like they were like a decade too late. And this is another one.
And Hemsworth.
It just feels so minor.
Liam Hemsworth is not heavy enough to carry this lead role.
He's not heavy at all.
No, I mean, I don't want to say you need a Gosling for it, but you need somebody that at least has some dramatic weight and doesn't just feel like, you know, for, you know, a cover model who's just in there for to wear a suit, you know, and be pushed around.
Speaking of which, we had Amber Heard, which I know you like, but isn't it just a little much that he hooks up with her in the beginning and then that she happens to be Harrison Ford's daughter?
A little too neat, if you will.
I was like, really? Yeah, come on. This is... We can do better than this.
Also, a telling thing, kind of like Runner, which is coming out in the end of September, which is slightly better than that mid-August release date that Paranoia is getting, which kind of shows that the dumping ground of studios. And when you got a film with Harrison Ford, Gary Oldman in it, that, you know, and even Hemsworth, who has a name now, and they're putting out in late August, just kind of goes
to
show.
Well, apparently Richard Dreyfuss has a little part
in
this.
Yeah, that was Richard Dreyfuss. I couldn't tell if that was Dreyfuss or not. God, he looked heavy.
So it's got some, you know, weight with the older crowd, but it's clearly played for the younger crowd. This is kind of like, to me, it reminds me of a misfired Wall Street.
I was going to say Wall Street Light.
Right?
A very Wall Street Light. But played for a younger audience, a dumbed down for a younger audience is how it looked like. Not intelligent anyway. And I'm telling you, you gave me some shit saying that I liked Harrison Ford in Ender's Game preview. I didn't mind him at all. And you said he was doing a shtick there, his old man.
I just feel like he's always doing that.
And
now. That's why I'm giving him shit.
He
for
was
it.
Doing it in this trailer. He was doing the bulldog spitting out of the sides of his mouth thing, where it was like, it's almost become
it's too much.
Al Pacino-esque, where he can't find a note that's not screaming or talking in a whisper.
Yeah, I know. It feels like he's just trying too hard. He's overacting.
Overacting. And the sad part about it is
I think
he was
necessary.
So good in 42 recently that he's now reverted back to some bad habits. Maybe it's the material. I don't know.
I think it definitely is the material.
Speaking of bad material, let's talk about a movie that you said that Paranoia was 10 years too late. I'll say that The Getaway, or just Getaway, is about 25 years too late. I mean, this is a movie starring Ethan Hawke and Selena Gomez.
What a great pairing.
Yeah, the pairing you've been waiting for. And apparently John Voight's in this movie, although he's wisely been hiding in the trailer. This is about a guy who steals a car that apparently belongs to Selena Gomez, but you wouldn't know that. I read that in the description, but you wouldn't know that by this trailer.
The car belongs to her?
Yeah, it looks like she's just carjacking
her. I thought she was hijacking
her. I thought, which leads you to believe...
That makes more sense, because then that's why... They have to team up.
Or why she pulls a gun on him. When he's got the car and she carjacks
him. That makes more sense.
And she's getting carjacked by a 12-year-old Latina girl. I thought, give me a break. What is it? And the whole movie looks fucking terrible. Just terrible.
Oh, it looks horrible. I can't wait to watch it.
I was bored even watching the trailer. If this does better on its opening weekend than Bullet to the Head and outgrosses either that or Last Stand.
I
want to see how bad
this is. I mean, I'm not going to theater to see this, but I will watch this when it comes out on video.
This is going to be bad.
This looks like the worst version of Jumpin' Jack Flash I've ever seen.
It should have had Jason Statham in the lead. Any movie about a car.
Or what was the other one with Shia LaBeouf and that girl?
Oh, that one? Eagle Eye?
Yeah, what was it? Eagle Eye, yeah. I think. I kept wanting to call it Sky Eye. But yeah, Eagle Eye. Isn't that kind of what this looks like? I mean, when they go into space and they go through the satellite and stuff?
It looks like a wannabe Enemy of the State mixed with Transporter.
Well, Eagle Eye, right? You got the guy telling him what to do, or else his wife's going to die.
If this opens better than Bullet to the Head or Last Stand, I will have lost faith in action.
I'm just, you just got to give it to Ethan Hawke, though, for striking while the iron's hot, because really no one wants this guy. But he is hot, kind of hot right now, based on just his performance in a couple of horror movies.
Off the wall career choices. I mean, this guy has, turned into the Kevin Bacon that won't go away.
I don't think anyone wants Ethan Hawke, which is unfortunate, because I think he's really good.
He's a very talented actor.
So he's doing stuff like this, but, at least it gets him out there.
This is definitely the mortgage payment, I'll tell you that. All right, let's talk about what I think is the strongest trailer of the bunch today, which I think is why we left it to the last, in my opinion. It's The Family. This is Luc Besson's film, his mob movie, written and directed by Luc Besson, produced by Martin Scorsese, starring De Niro and Michelle Pfeiffer as a couple of mafia, husband and wife, mafia princess and her husband, who are surviving attempted murder and are witness protected in France now. What do you think about this trailer?
I really want to see this. I think this looks great.
I do think it looks great, too.
Yeah, it looks funny. It's got that Luc Besson action to it. It looks well-directed, which he's always done. So I really want to see this. De Niro looks good in it. Pfeiffer looks good in it. I love Diana Agron as the daughter. Tommy Lee Jones even looks like...
He's having some fun, at least, on this. Kind of like some sly...
The whole idea seems very fun.
It's kind of like, not to compare it to other movies, but just to give you an idea, My Blue Heaven, the old Steve Martin movie...
Does it have more comedy than you thought it would? I didn't think that it would be necessarily that much of a comedy. I thought this was going to be more of a drama.
I didn't either.
I'm really happy to see that it looks fun.
Pfeiffer's back in her Married to the Mob role, though. Kind of I felt like that in it, which I like that kind of stuff. I think it's played very well. It's not over the top as in the trailer, at least. And I like that the family's all kind of doing their own dirt, and they're all trying to keep secrets from each other. And, what is the idea of this family and who is the family? And I like the idea. I like the idea of the fish out of the water,
when
too.
They try to come get him, and it's like, well, after you've established this family is clearly kind of a black sheep no matter where they go, including the mafia, apparently. So when they come to try to get them out of when the mafia tries to come and place their hit on them, you really see this family kind of coming together and getting out of it.
Kind of a Mr. and Mrs. Smith
Makes
moment,
sense.
Too, where they
yeah, exactly.
bond together and fight it off.
They're all off doing their own thing, but in the end, they're going to have to come together and fight it off. And for an action comedy / family movie, it looks pretty good.
I do. I think this looks very strong. And ironically, this is the kind of movie that you would associate Luc Besson with The Getaway and not The Family, And he's moved away from the genre of filmmaking. Or the overtly cliché genre.
I don't think he's moved away from it, but everything he's directed really has been different than what he's produced.
And this also looks like it has that French-European sensibility in a lot of ways because of the fact that they're, the kind of Americans looking at the French culture and trying to get
it. Just a great trailer cut great to the music and really worked.
Yeah, I think it's the strongest
trailer of the bunch.
As opposed to
these other three trailers, which is just good God.
In order of strength, I'd say The Family looks very watchable. Runner, I would watch. And the other two, I could go with my life without ever seeing.
I'll watch all of them at some point.
Brave man.
At some point, you watch everything.
Let's break this sucker down.
Let's take a look at this web of intricate numbers and digits. It's quite overwhelming. Now, for a complete breakdown and analysis.
Box Office Weekend Breakdown.
All right, let's do this.
This is based off estimates as we record this right now, and it's still a huge number, regardless of what the actuals are. The Purge opened up on a $3 million budget. It opened up 10 times that. This looks like 1983 when the budgets were minuscule and the grosses were huge. Like, did this really make $36.5 million this week? And this movie was barely promoted. A month ago, you couldn't tell me what The Purge was. I mean, you and I barely saw any advertising materials.
Yeah, I really didn't think the trailer... Well, I thought the trailers were unique and interesting, but I didn't think they would sell anyone else on it. This has apparently been a very Paranormal Activity, you know, which is another movie.
The movie's been widely panned by people that have seen it. I've gotten terrible word of mouth, but I think it's kind of how you phrased...
How did it do so well then?
I think because
over the week,
the premise stands out. I think it's one of those situations where the film doesn't stand up to the promise of the premise. You know, I think that it's a strong enough premise that it's getting people very intrigued of all different demographics, and then it can't live up to that, which is a very Paranormal Activity
bait and
switch, you know, thing to do. So
that's why I thought this wasn't going to make as much, but apparently big, and this only debuted in 2,500 theaters.
Very, very strong opening. We'll see if word of mouth continues to give it any sort of legs throughout the week or if the curiosity factor is won out, because we saw a very front-loaded Friday gross and it tapering off throughout the weekend. Still strong enough to win the weekend, but the highest-grossing horror film last year was Paranormal Activity with like $50 million, and already we've seen Evil Dead shoot past that, Mama shoot past that, and now this looks most assured to shoot past that unless it absolutely falls apart. But even so, this is just...
We'll know tomorrow, or we'll know by Monday's gross.
Unqualified hit, though, absolutely at this point. And even if it doesn't make a dollar more, it's still in a home run.
Oh, it's fine, right?
Yeah, an absolute home run.
So good job, Universal. They're number one with The Purge. And they're also number two, Fast Furious 6 held on. Third weekend down only 43%. Damn near $20 million, 19.7. We've now grossed over $200 million.
And looks like it's obviously on pace to be the highest grossing in the series here and abroad, where it's continuing. It's going to make $500 million abroad. It's on pace to do at least that. This could wind up close to the $800 million mark. Are we going to see a Fast and Furious billion-dollar grosser at some point? I mean, are we just climbing to that, which eats successive movie? Because I don't see this stopping.
Possibly. I mean, this is only the third movie this year to go over to.
Yeah, along with Star Trek, which is this weekend, which we'll get
which
to later.
Which will be number four.
Now you see me, though, hanging in there unbelievably well. One of the third best drop. A lot of good holds this weekend. And word of mouth has proven that this is going to be just a hit. I think this movie is going to continue to hang around, even if we see, as we see new releases come each weekend. But
it'll go a little bit. It's already gone.
I still think $19.5 million for a second week in gross, kind of what we thought this was going to open up with, you know, after it did so well last week. And $61 million in the
total.
It
is good, but this did cost $75 million to make, not three.
True, but this is going to make close. I would say this is the ballpark of $90 to $100 million here. I say we could do that at least across seas, and this is the kind of movie. I know people that have seen it twice now to see if it holds up structurally, and they're telling me it does. This is that kind of movie that I think has a long life on DVD and ancillary. So Lionsgate, Summit, that's been a hell of an acquisition for them.
So far, it's been all their hits.
Yeah, really. I mean, it's like when New Line was
everything
acquired by
Warner
done, Brothers,
they failed.
Yeah. All right, The Internship, debuting at a lowly fourth place.
It's all right, though. It's $18.1 million. It isn't, it's
not a tank. I mean, it's more than The Watch did. It's more than Hall Pass
has
done.
It's what it is. Yeah, it's about what you expect. Unfortunately, it cost $58 million to make because of the names.
But that's not in the range of the $100 million comedies, which we've seen as in The Hangover when they wanted outrageous money, you know, and stuff like that. So
it's all right. $18.1 million. People are going to see it, but it's just, this is not gotten great reviews. So this is going to be one of those comedies that you forget about, but maybe every once in a while you'll rent it.
I don't know why it's rated PG-13. I think you gotta go for the jugular on something like this, especially if you're selling it on the Wedding Crasher guys, you know. And on top of that, this is, I don't know, I think this kind of represents the secondary half of this guy. This what was so zany in the bromance genre
well,
was so strong.
These,
now it's no longer.
These kind of happy-go-lucky comedies now?
Not at 2 hours and 10 minutes, I'll tell you that.
there have been some hits in this vein, like The House Bunny, you know, where people get involved, a fish out of water scenario where they get involved with a group of losers and they somehow rise to the top. This is a very 80s
it's dodgeball-esque.
Kind of
I mean, it's all that kind of stuff.
But is it okay? I think it's a little more happy or go lucky than Dodgeball, actually. Dodgeball, I think, is a little quirkier. This, it doesn't have that same kind of a, you know, if you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball. It doesn't have that kind of stuff in it. So what do you, does this kind of stuff work anymore? Like this 80s kind of, you know, Revenge of the Nerds type stuff? I don't know.
I don't think so. And on top of it, it's too, the scheme, everything looked bland. The poster, the scheme, I mean, everything about it was just so,
This isn't like Zoolander or Dodgeball, like you say, but those are kind of quirky.
I would even say that this movie could benefit from some stunt casting to have it play up the cameos.
Yeah, very true.
You know, all that kind of stuff. And the whole idea of going to work for Google isn't nearly as fresh and intriguing as it used to be.
The funniest thing in the trailer is that, you know, is the X-Men joke.
Right. Which I think is by far the funniest thing in the trailer. And
well, that's what I mean. But that was kind of almost damn near the only thing funny in the trailer, even though this movie looks like an easy watch.
Doesn't that joke feel 10 years old, too?
I know. That's the other thing about it, right? But I will watch this. It looks really easy to watch. Like I say, this will just be an easy comedy you can put on. And, you know, it's not going to matter if it's bad or good. Because it's just
at 2 hours and 10 minutes, I'll be waiting till this sucker is at home.
I'll be watching this at home. I'm not watching this. It's only 2 hours long. Good lord.
It's a comedy. I'm telling you, there's no reason for a comedy to be that long.
Wedding Crashers is 2 hours long. There's been plenty of really long comedies.
Wedding Crashers is too long.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Cut out the sentiment. We don't need the schmaltzy sentiment stuff. We need an hour and 40 minutes of funniness.
An hour and 40 minutes? Good lord.
I'll give you an hour and 40.
Sentiment is good.
We got Epic in the fifth spot, hanging in with the best drop week to week at 27%. It's because it is the only children's film playing in the market right now. 12 million third weekend gross, still only at 84 million. This does now look assured to cross that 100 million barrier and not be the complete, you know, meltdown that Rise of the Guardians was for DreamWorks, but this is going to be amongst the lowest grossers. And they have another weekend to themselves this coming weekend, but then Monsters University comes out on the 21st and will decimate this. I think within, you know, it probably outgrosses within the first 10 days. So, but, you know, at the same time, at least what I thought initially, Epic didn't have any sort of chance.
It looks horrible.
Right. And from what I'm hearing, it's very adult. It's not. It deals with some very adult matters, and it's more on the upper range of kids' films. It's not, you know, necessarily meant for the younger audiences, as maybe Hotel Transylvania or Wreck-It Ralph might be,
or Smurfs,
or The Croods, which is why those movies have done so well.
Star Trek: Into Darkness, number 6, down only 30%, 11.7 million for the weekend. And as Jason said, this is now the fourth movie of the year to join the 200 million club.
Well done for Star Trek.
So there you go. Yeah, we knew that this was going to be, you know, a hit, no doubt. It just wasn't going to outdo or equal the first one. It's unfortunate.
I thought pre-release that this actually had a shot at being the first Star Trek film to gross 300 million. I thought that it was going to improve upon the predecessor. It's now trailing by just a very slight, not even a big margin. And goes to show that it's connecting with its target audience and it's selling.
It's good, actually. It's not bad. We were downplaying it a little bit, aren't we? But maybe we should be more upbeat about it. It's doing good.
Yeah, it is. It's actually hanging in there quite well week to week, which represents a good word of mouth, I think, on this thing. And we'll get into this on the next podcast, on our review show podcast. Make sure you listen to that. We'll be talking about 7 movies and Star Trek will be one of them. Episode 209 of Numerics Podcast.
Ooh. After Earth won't be one of them.
Ooh, After Earth has not been seen by a lot of people. This is kind of safe face this weekend, though, because
it's been seen. It's made 46.5 million.
It's trailing behind where Battleship and John Carter were in their respective. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. That's not doing well.
It has saved
been seen.
A little bit of face because it opened up with about 50 million estimated world cross seas this weekend. So it looks like it's going to do, you know, pretty much Oblivion numbers. So you can look for about 200 million across seas and maybe 60 here, still though.
I had a 60% drop.
Ouch. Playing ultra wide still. I mean, playing in almost 1,000 theaters more, 900 theaters more than The Purge. And the per screen average is the lowest. Exactly. So if you're trying to make out, go see After Earth. Or The Hangover, which is just dropping screens and fans alike.
But that's fine. It doesn't need any more fans, right?
It doesn't need any more money. Stop seeing this movie.
It's crossed $100 million this weekend. It's down 55%. Yeah, sure. 7.3 million. It's made $102 million so far, though, and worldwide.
It had a huge drop, though, from week to week worldwide, which represents that even foreign audiences are getting wise. Since it's made $170 million foreign. The last one did $352 abroad, so I don't think this has a shot at matching
it's
this.
Good to go.
Yeah, but $272 already. This is a $300 million grossing comedy.
We're done.
Yeah, this is crazy that this is... we just all feel obligated, I'll tell you that. So
I didn't see it.
Well, you may be.
I don't feel obligated.
You may be seeing it. You never know. I will. Ninth spot, Iron Man 3. That's 6 weeks in the top 10. 5.7 million, 31% drop. It's actually a really nice decline.
Damn.
$395 million estimated.
She's about to go over 400.
Yeah, which is what we expected. You know, I thought this was going to be a $400 million grosser. We really didn't know how to peg this pre-release because of the Avengers factor. Was this going to play like a straight sequel to the Avengers or like an Iron Man sequel? But it's done fantastic. And as more movies come out this summer that I see, I kind of maybe grow a little bit kinder.
What do you think? This is going to go just over $400 million. So how much... Clearly, I don't know, Avengers 2, what do you think? Does it beat the first Avengers? Or do you think Iron Man 3 is any... Gives you any idea of what does that sequel
do? I would say it splits that and goes about 500. Maybe it does half, you know, I would say it does less than the first, more than Iron Man 3. I don't think that the next, I think Thor and Captain America might struggle to reach their predecessor's grosses of $176 million because some fatigue.
A little overkill at this point.
Maybe setting in, you know, so we'll see. We'll talk about that later in the year.
The Great Gatsby. Down only 35%. Good Lord. 4.2 million for the weekend. 136 million total now. You know, Lerman's got to be super happy as always because this has just turned into a decent hit for him. It was really expensive though, but
I think Lerman
we won't talk about
is
that.
Riding naked on a kangaroo in the outback right now. He's so happy. I mean, this guy is,
he's got to be enjoying this.
He's got $142 million to add on to that. This is a $300 million film, a grossing film at this point for, a summer romantic dramedy. This is a strange release. This cannot be guessed. This is one of the Google predictors. Bullshit. You're not going to tell me you could have predicted. I'm serious. They could have told me that with all the trouble and all that kind of stuff, they could have guessed the $50 million opening and eventual $140, $150 million growth.
That's true. Well, with all these, you know, not steep declines for most of the stuff out here, aside from After Earth and Hangover Part 3, it was interesting when I went to go see Star Trek Into Darkness, during the week, last week. And out of the 45 showings of movies, only 4 were 3D.
I think...
Isn't that interesting? None of The Great Gatsby was not in 3D. There were 2 Star Trek Into Darkness showings in 3D. And there were 2 of Epic in 3D. And that was it.
Strangely enough, this has been...
Everything else playing was 2D.
I haven't heard a lot of people this summer talking to me about 3D, which in past summers, that's been, you know, the big... Well, did you see it in 3D? Was always the question after.
Yeah.
Have you seen something? Now, it's not even part of the conversation. I did hear that. Did you see Star Trek in 3D?
I did not.
Yeah, neither.
Well, I couldn't. It didn't align. I would have preferred it.
I did see Gatsby in 3D. I caught that in 3D, which was well worth the ticket price, but nothing else thus far. All right, that wraps up our episode. Thank you for.
Do you want to talk about some Much Ado About Nothing?
Oh, I do actually want to talk about that. Thank you for cutting me.
A little Joss
Whedon
movie. I gotta say, talk about this movie because this has been this is obviously the Shakespeare Joss Whedon film, but been getting so much buzz
for a year now.
Buzz.
Though, I mean, even when he was shooting it last year, when in the Avengers was being, I've heard about this movie.
Had a great opening though. 5 screens, 36,000 per screen average, 183,000. You know, I hope it expands.
You'd like to see this, right?
I want to see it, yeah.
I'd like to see it, too, because it's shot in black and white. It's updated.
With some color.
And Whedon's such a strong fan of Shakespeare, and you can see it in his work. I mean, even Marvel, see, Avengers has a lot of Shakespearean speech. You know, Loki, a lot of what he says feels like it could come out of a Shakespearean play with updated verbiage, so... I think that Whedon is very gifted in these one-offs that he does.
Did you ever see the Kenneth Branagh one?
I did. I like that one too.
With Beckinsale and Reeves. I like that one.
Denzel Washington was in that.
Much Ado About Nothing's very good.
I just think that when he does something like this, or when a filmmaker goes and does a little thing like this too, it kind of reinvigorates their creative juices. And I think going into the Avengers, that's what you need to do. So I'm glad he did this movie.
It's a little side project.
I'm interested to see it, but there's so many of these art house, quote unquote, art house films right now that I want to see, including Mud and Kon-Tiki, that I hope I can get around to seeing Much Ado About.
We will at some point. It'll be out of video pretty soon, I imagine.
Exactly. Although, this has been the year, you know, of as big as these blockers have been, you have something like Mud crossing, you know, going to be crossed 20 million, Spring Breakers doing 15, Place Beyond the Pine doing well, now this doing well. I mean, this has been a comeback year for independent cinema. You know,
they just want something bigger than the event films.
Yeah, which is,
you know, it's been too much.
I think it shows a sort of maybe even sophistication on audiences right now. Where, you know,
well, me too. I never saw Oblivion. I never saw After Earth. You know, I did go see Star Trek because I knew I wanted to see that, and I did enjoy it. But you know, had I seen Oblivion and After Earth, I don't know if I would actually have enjoyed Star Trek as much.
Maybe that's my problem was.
You know? Well, but there's that point at which it's overkill. And I know we were talking off air a little bit. And you were saying, you know, you watch more dramas now than action movies because when you watch an action movie, you tend to tune out stuff. And I went through that phase last year and probably the year before as well, where it's just too much action. Just, it's too much. And it becomes nothing but noise after a while. It's not well directed. It's not particularly well written or well made. So what's the point? It's just loud and in your face.
Yeah, I was going to make a joke. If I could go back and tell my, you know, 10-year-old self that I would be burnt out on action films, that'd probably kick me in the nuts. But the thing is, those movies were well-directed. Even though they're schlocky now, at least they were visually comprehensible. Right. You could understand what was happening and where the movement was.
Shakespeare here, full of sound and fury signifying nothing, right?
Yeah.
that's the quote that applies directly to a lot of those big event movies they're making.
Right? Look at this guy. You rogues, Carl. I can't even respond to that. Jesus, this guy. Well done. Well played, sir.
I'm done.
That was Much Ado About Nothing.
That was all it got out. Yeah.
You just bowed out gracefully, my friend. I'll tell you that. Well, speaking for Shakespeare and Trevor Anderson, I am Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Match. I want to thank you guys, as always, for joining us on this podcast. We'll be back with you very quickly on Thursday with episode 209. That'll be an all-review show. 7 movies we'll be reviewing, including Star Trek, which we talked about a little bit on this show. Join us for that, as well as next Monday, we'll be back with you on this weekend's breakdown. And join Box Office Ace. Get over there, play the game, outguess Trevor and I, as well as our leading predictors. You can check it all out at Box Office Ace, and be sure to visit MovieMavericks.com. Thank you for joining us, and we'll be back with you soon.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to MovieMavericks.com, Warp 9. Engage!